Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, our UN correspondent speaks with us about a meeting of the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL. We'll have reaction to the Taliban takeover of Kunduz.
We all, stunned that it happened.
Our science reporter tells us about painless tooth repair. And who would have guessed it? But James Bond is making it big in the music world. It's all ahead on The Voice of America. The Global Coalition to Counter ISIL and Violent Extremism has been meeting at the United Nations in New York today. Covering the story and on the line with us is UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Welcome, Margaret.
Thanks, Susan.
Well, what happened at the meeting today?
Well, President Obama chaired this session on countering ISIL. He said that there were more than 100 countries represented at the meeting, and there were civil society groups and also private sector participants, and it was a packed room. There was a balcony in the room. The room was full. There were several hundred people attending this special summit. And, there are about 60 countries in the anti-ISIL coalition, and President Obama welcomed three new ones. He said Nigeria, Tunisia, and Malaysia are joining the fight against ISIL, and he said nearly two dozen countries are contributing militarily to the campaign. President Obama said there's been some successes. He said the Iraqi army and the coalition have liberated towns in Kirkuk and Tikrit in Iraq, so he said that was, good. He said it will take time. He said it will not happen overnight. It's a long fight, but that there has been progress.
Well, this is sort of an assessment meeting to see how things are going.
Exactly, because last year during the UN General Assembly, President Obama chaired a Security Council session in which there was a resolution adopted that would work to stem the flow of foreign fighters to terrorist groups, and it would also work to cut off their financing. So this is a bit of an assessment sort of a meeting, and it's different countries are making their presentations at the session.
Is this going to happen again next year, or are they going to meet before next year?
Well, I think it's an ongoing thing. There was a summit, I believe, in February at the White House on countering terrorism. And so it's an ongoing sort of affair because this fight against ISIL is commanding the full attention of governments around the world. And as you'll see, for instance, like Nigeria has just joined the coalition. They're fighting Boko Haram in their country. And President Buhari of Nigeria said that one of the problems they have is that the sort of the publicity surrounding ISIL with all the beheadings and atrocious acts, which get them attention, has emboldened groups in Africa to pledge their allegiance to ISIL in order to gain traction locally. And he said that Boko Haram pledged its allegiance to ISIL in March of this year. So he thought that that was a symbol that, or a sign that Boko Haram is actually becoming weakened in an operational way, and they needed to align themselves with ISIL to encourage recruitment. So it's an interesting interconnectedness that we're seeing with ISIL and other terrorist groups.
Well, much attention is focusing on the meeting between President Obama and the Russian President Putin. What can you tell us about that?
So that was a much awaited meeting. The two leaders hadn't met for over a year. They spoke for about an hour and a half on Monday evening. From what we understand from officials, the first half of the meeting focused on Ukraine, the second part on Syria. As you know, the United States is very unhappy with Russia annexing Crimea. So the meeting officials said President Obama spoke about the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. He called for the implementation of the Minsk process. On Syria, huge issue here at this year's UN General Assembly. They spoke about their common interests in seeing ISIL defeated and their differences over the political future of Syria, and that primarily means the role of President Assad in the political future of Syria, as I think most of our listeners may know by now. The United States does not want to see President Assad in any sort of transitional government, but the Russians have an entirely different view on that.
Is this a typical United Nations General Assembly meeting, or is it kind of different this year?
Well, it's different in the sense that this year is the 70th anniversary of the United Nations, so there's a lot of reflection going on over the organization itself, why it was established in the wake of World War II to prevent another world war and to prevent human suffering. And at the same time, we're seeing at this moment in history the largest refugee crisis in the world since World War II. So it's sort of a very reflective General Assembly in that sense. But it's typical in the sense that leaders are here to discuss the most pressing issues of the day, and for us in 2015, the most pressing issues of the day are degrading and destroying ISIL, and also stemming the flow of refugees and migrants into Europe, to try and get that crisis under control. And there will be a very big meeting on Wednesday here that the Secretary General is chairing on the refugee and migration crisis.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us from the UN.
Sure. My pleasure, Susan.
The world body is reveling in all the attention it's been getting on social media. Reporter Michael Lippin is here with more on that. Hey, Michael, what kind of response has there been on Twitter to the UN General Assembly?
Hi, Susan. How's it going? Well, Good. You know, a lot of people have been tweeting about the UNGA in the past few days. In fact, the hashtag UNGA has been mentioned 87,000 times in the last 24 hours. That's according to the Topsy Analytics website. And that number jumps to 293,000 tweets when you look at the past week. Also, when you type in the UNGA hashtag into a tweet, Twitter displays what's called a hash flag right next to it. And in this case, what you see is the UN's circular-shaped blue and white logo. Now, the UN has been encouraging the usage of that hashtag through its main Twitter account, @UN. Yesterday, it sent out this message. Thanks for all your UNGA tweets. We're showing them on screens around the building. Keep them coming. And that note was accompanied by a photo of one of those screens. So who knows? You know, your next hashtag UNGA tweet could potentially be seen by a world leader if he or she happens to be passing by.
That's kind of fun. What are some of the most popular tweets that have used the UNGA hashtag in the last day?
Well, one tweet highlighted by Topsy comes from the White House, whose account is @WhiteHouse. It's actually a quote from President Obama's UN address on Monday, and it reads like this. People are not as different as they're told. They can be made to fear, but they can also respond to hope. And embedded in that UNGA tweet is a short video clip of Obama's speech, the part that includes that line. Another tweet that got attention is by CNN, which wrote a piece about a brief encounter between Obama and Russian President Putin ahead of their formal meeting yesterday. That encounter came at a UN lunch for world leaders. The CNN tweet quotes Obama as saying cheers as he clinks wine glasses with Putin, who's sitting right beside him. Now, you've got to see the picture to understand the personal dynamics between the two men. Obama's expression is dead serious, while Putin has the hint of a smile. The CNN article linked in the tweet says Obama made the following toast before grimly eyeing Putin and clinking glasses. Amid the inevitable trials and setbacks, may we never relax in our pursuit of progress, and may we never abandon the pursuit of peace. Well, that was what Obama told Putin before that toast. And just before I go, I want to mention that you can follow us on Twitter @VOA_IE, and I'm on Twitter @Michael_Lippin. Susan?
Thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
When a friend needs help, most of us usually just jump in and lend a hand. Studies have shown that along with humans, highly social birds and other mammals also behave in the same way. Now, Australian scientists have found that at mealtime, some fish species also support and help each other out. The researchers studied pairs of rabbit fishes and noticed that one of them would stand guard against predators so that the other could eat peaceably. The two would then switch roles so that the other could eat safely too. It had been thought that it was impossible for fish to behave in such a cooperative manner. Scientists say that these kinds of cooperative abilities usually involve species that have complex cognitive and social skills, skills that fish aren't supposed to have. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
¶¶ Afghan security forces and the Taliban are facing off in the northern Afghan city of Kunduz. Monday, for the first time, the insurgents captured a major city, drawing alarm and condemnation from Afghan and UN officials. Nasir Shinsab is an expert on Afghan affairs and author of Silent Trees, and he joins us now on the line. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
What is your reaction to the takeover of Kunduz?
We all, stunned that it happened, but the point is that Afghanistan is on a sliding scale, and things like this will happen more often in the future, I'm afraid.
Why is this happening now?
Well, I assume that the Taliban prepared themselves better than they usually do, and that the Afghan authorities, as so often happens in Afghanistan, underestimated their shortcomings and overestimated their possibilities. That's an Afghan trait, and they usually have then a warped appreciation of their understanding of their situation, and things like this happens.
Is the leadership of the Taliban changing?
Well, the leadership has already changed because we now know that Mullah Omar is dead, and a person by the name of Mullah Massoud has taken over the leadership. I assume that the new leadership wants to establish itself as a firm leadership and are going on a hard line, I think.
What does that mean?
That means they want to show their strength, they want to show their determination to their people, and they want to tell the people indirectly that they are the right leadership.
What role should the international community play in Afghanistan?
I think that the international community always looked at Afghanistan simplistically and optimistically. I think that it was way too early when the decision was made that the war should be handed over to the Afghan security forces, that train has left the station, and I'm not sure whether we can reverse it now.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, a new way to avoid the feared dental drill, and a number one hit predicted for James Bond music. Dread seeing the dentist, the pain of the drill, the ache in the jaw? Well, my colleague George Putish says, fear no more, and he joins me here in the studio. Welcome, George.
Thank you.
What's this all about?
It's about a new technology that a British company called Reminova developed for remineralization of the damaged teeth with a little bit of electrical energy. The point is, see, our teeth are maybe, you know, smooth on the surface, but there are microscopic crevices where bacteria can lodge and start the tooth decay.
That's where you get a cavity from.
Correct. This process is too fast. I mean, the bacteria work too fast for the natural remineralization of the tooth enamel. So if we neglect it, it develops into tooth decay. Now, if we stop it before it goes too far, we can actually repair the tooth. And this new technology involves applying a little bit of special minerals and applying a little bit of electrical current, which takes only, you know, a few minutes, so that the mineral that covers our teeth is replenished and actually covers the crevice that was started being eaten by bacteria.
So it's a way to fill in crevices that may get cavities eventually because it'll allow the bacteria in there.
Correct.
And is this only for kids?
No, it's for grown-ups too, of course, but it's especially beneficial for kids because it's, first of all, painless. It does not involve any drilling. And the other thing is that if we catch the tooth decay early on, kids will, you know, do not develop the fear of the visit to the dentist's office and may, you know, develop even a habit of regularly checking their teeth.
I wonder if this might be applied all over the teeth when the child is very young before he starts getting more crevices. Would it be all teeth or just maybe one tooth that the dentist suspects has a crevice?
It takes a professional dentist to check the teeth very precisely and see if any cavities started forming. So I don't think it can be applied to the whole jaw, the whole set of teeth, only to the teeth that have started decaying.
And you probably don't have an answer to my next question, but that would be about how expensive do you think this is going to be?
I don't have a precise answer to this question, but I do not expect it to be very expensive. It only involves a regular visit to the dentist's office. But, you know, if we want to preserve our teeth, we have to do regular visits anyway.
So you'd be spending that money no matter what. Hey, how strong is this? Does it stay on?
Yes, it stays on. It's actually only supplementing the natural process of remineralization of the tooth enamel, and it stays on, yes, and it's permanent.
Okay, well, thank you so much, George.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
Researchers in Australia are working on a robot that could help protect the Great Barrier Reef from the predatory crown of thorns starfish called cots. The underwater robot, the Cotsbot, has been 10 years in the making. Matt Dunbabin is with the Queensland University of Technology.
It's only still basically this year that we've been able to really hit it hard and come up with a solution that we think can really make a difference.
For now, divers hunt out the predators and inject them with a toxic solution. But Dunbabin says they are just not enough people to do the job.
We need a force multiplier that is actually going to make a difference on the reef.
Researchers say they hope the Cotsbot will be fully functional by early 2016 to seek and destroy the invasive starfish, delivering more than 200 lethal shots in 8 hours' time. The robot has been trained to pick out the pests from other sea life through the use of film and 3D printed models. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Greenbeat.
Well, James Bond is making news in the world of music. And here to talk about it is the host of Border Crossings, Larry London. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Susan. Well, I'll tell you, there is exciting news coming out of the UK for James Bond 007 fans. The new James Bond film is coming out in November.
Right.
It's called Spectre. And the theme song came out on Friday last week, sung by Sam Smith. And it is anticipated. The experts are saying, the BBC, the UK chart people are saying, this song, Writing's on the Wall, is going to debut at number one.
How do they know that?
How do they know that? The experts always know. And until they're ready to officially announce it, we just have to say it's speculation right now. In the UK is that this is going to be the first time a James Bond theme song has hit number one. We're talking 23 James Bond theme songs over the years. And several of them in recent times, like Skyfall, which was sung by Adele a few years ago, went as high as number two.
I remember that one.
A View to a Kill, number two. And this is the first time that a British male solo has sung a theme song for James Bond's films since 1965, when Tom Jones sang the theme song in Thunderball.
I remember that, too.
I remember those. Me, too. I'm right there with you.
Well, this singer, though, he's a good-looking, talented guy.
He's a very good-looking, talented guy. He's been riding the wave of success on his album In the Lonely Hour, which earned the Best Pop Vocal Album at the Grammys in December. He was nominated for 6. He won 4, including Best New Artist. And his hit song, Stay With Me, won the Song of the Year and the Record of the Year and was number one in more than 20 countries. So this guy's had a big year.
Didn't he kind of pop up from nowhere, too?
He did. He sang a song with another clubhouse mix producer-type guy called Disclosure, and the song was Latch, and it came out in 2013. It was quite popular. They have a new song out right now together called Omen, but Sam Smith has just been putting out the hits for his album In the Lonely Hour this past year.
Well, thank you very much, Larry, for stopping by.
Thank you, Susan.
Gives me goosebumps. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The basin of the lower Mekong River, which runs from China through Burma, Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam, and drains into the South China Sea, is home to over 60 million people. Some 85% of them rely directly on the river for their livelihoods, particularly those who are involved in irrigated agriculture and fishing. This means that any unexpected occurrence that affects the flow of the Mekong River could spell disaster for the entire region. That is why, on August 31st, USAID and NASA, in cooperation with the Asian Disaster Preparedness Center, the Deltares Institute of the Netherlands, Sweden's Stockholm Environment Institute, and the Spatial Informatics Group of California, launched the Surveyor Mekong Project, which will use satellite imagery to monitor the region's environment. The hope is that this technology will allow for more accurate prediction and management of floods, droughts, and other natural disasters, allowing regional decision makers to improve agricultural risk management, manage land use more sustainably, assess impacts of hydroelectric power facilities, and help governments and communities increase resilience to the negative effects of climate change. So, for example, satellite imaging will monitor weather patterns, water cycles, and water availability, which may be heavily impacted by climate change and by population growth. This will allow for better long-term planning, which should improve regional food security and forest resource management. On the other hand, a function called satellite remote sensing can monitor long-term changes in vegetative land cover caused by urbanization, deforestation, and agricultural practices. This data could, for example, be used to determine whether current farming practices are producing optimal crop yields. Such information will allow agronomists, urban planners, natural resource managers, and forestry personnel to make informed decisions about crops, urban development, and forest management, to name just a few. Under Surveyor Mekong, we are tapping into the best available science and technology to help protect this region's vital ecosystems and the benefits they provide to society, said Beth Page, director of USAID's Regional Development Mission for Asia. Already, Asian scientists, NASA scientists, and others are beginning to develop tools to build resilience and contribute to tackling some of the region's most pressing challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.